A reverse shart?
A reverse shart. What's a reverse shart?
Shit. All right. Well, so a reverse shart.
This is for the permanent record.
Just for permanent record here is when you got a burp, right, guys? You got a burp. And as you burp, guess what happens? Food comes out with it.
Oh, food comes out with it. Not poop? Because I was thinking a reverse shart could be like you suck poop up your asshole.
I mean, whatever you stick up does get sucked up. I mean, I'm just letting that. Jesus Christ. The other day, I don't know if I should tell the story or not.
You know, it's up to you, man.
Well, you. I mean,
we're just being honest with our friends. Only only our closest friends.
The other day, I walked past the bedroom and my wife is putting the kids to bed. And my boys are always like, they're boys. Like, they're, you know, young little kids, and they're always like making jokes, right? Joke this, joke that. And one of them's like, stick a corn up my butt. And, you know, like, it's like, what? No, time out here. No, we don't do, you know, say stuff like that. And they're giggling like little boys do. And Katie's like, I mean, she's a nurse, so she thinks a different level than everybody else. She's like, hey, boys, listen, nothing goes up your butts. Anything goes up your butts, it disappears. And then you have to go have surgery and get that out. And my boys just go dead silence. And Katie's like, and on to the next thing. So, with that being said, if you know a nurse, and then you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. So, the problem is corn would not be comfortable. But we'll move on. We'll just move on because it's not really.
Can we push the restart button?
We're live, motherfuckers. We can't start over. All right. So, we got to decide which way we want to go. Right now, we want to go.
Go anyway, just out of this way.
You want to talk about the what happened with Joker and the Suns owner, or you want to talk about what Trump said to the lawyer?
Well, first of all, let's just go with what Trump said to the lawyer was brilliant.
Okay, first of all, unless you want to win, it was funny, but okay, let's be honest, it's not going to help him in his case. He said to the lawyer,
"Well, first of all, you're not my type." Back up. Just so people have education on what happens is that, you know, through life,
deposition.
Too early in the morning. Anyway, they happen, guys. They just happen, right? The most important advice that we've ever heard given to us. Go ahead, Mark. No, it doesn't matter who it was from, but.
It's just don't answer a question they're not asking you. Only answer the questions they're asking you.
So don't volunteer anything.
So Trump just volunteered that he wasn't attracted to the lawyer.
He just for lets example, it loose.
You are not my type, man.
I would never do anything with you.
I hope you don't take that personally, but never. Even if the world was ending, I would never touch you.
What? And then didn't she ask him about, did you use the phrase, grab him by the pussy?
Oh, yeah. And he said, well, traditionally, that's how it works. He said, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective. Like, I think he's going to lose this one, bro. I think he's just, like, you could say he stuck his foot in his mouth, but I think he just, like, shit in his hand, and then he just wiped it all over his face, and then he tried to convince people that they wanted a taste.
He just stuck something in his asshole, let's just be honest.
Corn husk. Corn husk.
Oh yeah, there was a niche up there.
The kernels were still on there to create a little bit of slide. Oh, glide, God, glide in, glide out. Okay. Now we got to talk about Matt. I can't even say his name for sure.
Ishiba.
All right. First of all, we got to give a lot of props to Tom Izzo. Okay, his former coach in college at Michigan State University, because he taught him how to take a charge.
Oh yeah.
There's no doubt he taught him how to take that charge. And Booker said after the game, he said, you know, he got us a point. Because Jokic, you know, shoved him with the elbow, a little push, and so they gave him a T. And Booker's like, hey, he gave us a point. Now, the Nuggets are pissed. Like, they're like, how can a fan, he's just a fan, even though he's the owner, how can he influence the game? Like, how can he try to stop the ball? Like, yada, yada, yada. Okay, whatever, bro. It was one of the best moments I've seen in the playoffs in a long time.
And did you hear them ever, like, the Denver players ever acknowledge that he was the owner?
I did hear Jokic at the end of the press conference say he knew, but he was a fan in that moment. He's at the courtside. He's a fan. He knew who he was. And then now,
Mike Malone
said, "I do not give a shit." Whenever they asked him, he's like,
"Okay, so he doesn't like they're not acknowledging he's the owner then."
Well, they know it. They realize it, but they're just treating him as if he is a fan in that moment.
But let's just think about this though for 20 seconds. All right, Ishiba leans over to help the person. Yes, he held the ball, right? But the thing is, he's not looking at Joker, right? He's not looking at him saying, hey, he's coming towards me. He's helping the person that got knocked out, his player, right? Holding the ball, doing what he's supposed to do, which is what? Nothing. Because if he throws the ball, if he does anything else with the ball, then it looks bad on him. He's holding the ball, helping his player up, or just a basketball player up, right?
Like
everybody in their dreams wants to. And here comes Joker trying to steal the ball. He doesn't see who it is, so he holds the ball. You know what I'm saying?
You're not supposed to, but he's not the first fan to do it.
Yeah, and you hold the, and he held the ball, and then when that moment, it was this intense reaction by Joker, who just yanked the ball out of his hands and then repeated to push him. And that was the key, is if he had just taken the ball and done that thing and then flared out and walked away, right, then it would be a different situation. But when he pushed him, that to me, and yes, he's an owner, but if this was a regular fan – and he did that, this would be a different situation. We would be talking about maybe the 2-game, maybe 3-game suspension by Joker.
Really?
Dude, you cannot go into the stands and do something like that. He went into the space of the fans. And what his argument was, right? What was his argument? I just went into the, you know, the fans, and he held the ball holding up play. But he went into the area, into the space of the fans. And once you do that, you get in trouble. And the league might be okay with it right now because it was the owner, or it could have been a GM and be okay with it because part of the team. But if he wasn't part of the team, he would be looking at multiple game suspensions because, again, this is not Malice in the Palace situation, but they have tried so hard to make sure that players and fans stay separate. And if Joker wants to say he's just a fan, then he needs to be held accountable in that way.
Yeah, Johnny Bravo's hit it on the head here. He said there was an actress where Josh Giddey tried to get the ball from her hands and she didn't give it up. Like, a lot of times these things happen. I think Jokic felt like, because he was the owner, I assume he knew that, even though he's only been the owner for a very short time. It was a pretty high-profile situation that brought him in to own the team. I feel like Joker kind of was irritated because of who he was. And like you're saying, if Joker had gone in and just treated a regular fan like this, then it might be a multi-game suspension. The fact that it's an owner might
That's why I don't understand his argument. Mm-hmm. If he's trying to make this a fan thing, then he's fucked. But if he's like, he's part of their team, and he tried to obstruct the play, he would be better off that way. But the second he turns this into a fan situation, it's like, dude, you're barking up the wrong tree. It's like Rudy Gobert touching all the mics right now.
Really?
I mean, seriously, like the commissioner's like, I've got to stop this because, again, this is a owner and a player. I can throw fines at them and be okay. But the second Joker's out there, Mike Malone's out there, and everybody else is out there saying he's just a fan, it's making the commissioner not make a decision right away because he's a very methodical commissioner. And he's like, well, if they want him to treat him like a fan, then what do I need to do? Do I need to go there and I need to re-educate them and say, this is not a fan situation. We want to go out there in the next interview. I want you to say he's part of the team. He's part of the team. Because if this was a fan situation, I have to suspend him. If this was a team situation, then I can find them and just be like, mind your fucking business, guys.
So what would happen if a fan did an equivalent thing like that to a player? Like, we saw
arrested.
That one fan
arrested on the spot. Okay. Like, thousands of dollars in fines.
We saw that one fan kind of reach in and kind of touch him. It wasn't really a push, but it looked like he tried to push him, but it was just like he couldn't really get any leverage because he was reaching over people. Yeah. But he touched him. Ejection. They escorted that fan out. And then all of a sudden you're looking at it and you're like, well, so if that fan touches Joker like this, he's ejected. I agree. Like, if, like, it's one thing if you're, like, patting the player on the back whenever he does something good. It's another thing if you're, like, trying to create, you know, tension. But so if a fan touches Joker, ejection. But if Joker touches a fan or throws an elbow, pushes a fan, he doesn't get an equivalent thing. And so I feel like there's a lot of players.
But again, this goes back to if this was Dennis Rodman diving into the fans, right, mm-hmm. and literally knocking somebody out, mm-hmm. and they're having to bring him out on a stretcher, which happened, right? You know, I saw that. To me, like, that's one thing because it's part of the game, right? Mm-hmm. It's part inside of the organization of inside the stadium of the understanding that this could happen. But when a player goes into the fans' space, and we saw this with the Malice from the Palace, bro, and we cannot get back to that spot again. We can't get back to that spot. So how do you make sure we don't get back to that spot? It's the same thing with Draymond Green getting a suspension. It's the same thing with whoever else would get suspensions, that they would just be like, why? I didn't deserve that suspension. It doesn't matter. You know, I think of, was it not Desmond Bane, but DB, you know? He gets a suspension.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, well, it was because of his record beforehand. You know, like, to me, I mean, Djokic is a great player, but he makes these stupid, irrational decisions sometimes. And we saw one of them last night. And my question is that, if this was a fan and they had an opportunity to slap him on the wrist right now and make it a game suspension or make it a $175,000 whatever, like, if they could do that right now, they need to do it. Because if this happens again for him and he thinks they can get away with it, like, he's like everybody else, man. He's going to take advantage of the system and take advantage that he can get away with something. Why wouldn't he?
All the players are asking for more protection between the fans and the players. Now, if this doesn't get addressed, right, if this doesn't get addressed, I hope not. I hope they don't put up some, you know, some screens or like some glass walls or anything. We don't need that shit in the NBA. But if the players are going into the fans, I have to address it. So let me ask you this. Because I felt like when I woke up, I was like, well, we'll talk about it. It's kind of funny. But I feel like after talking to you about it, it's not over.
It can't be over. I mean, the commissioner might just slap fines on people. But the fine is going to be way deeper because he's going to be looking at the owner and saying, hey, listen, this is your warning. And he's going to look at Joker and say, if anything else happens in your career, like, this is the starting point. You're fucked. You know, like you're on
will
probation.
Will it impact this
you're on
series
probation
this
now.
Year? Is there a chance it will impact the series this year?
I mean, anytime that there's something like this happens, yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not just a little bit, but if Joker goes out, I mean, he scored 56 last night and lost?
Did he really score 56?
Dude, it seemed like it. I kept on watching and being like, holy shit, he's scoring so much, bro.
You look that up, but like with the Suns and the Nuggets series, right?
53. I'm sorry, my bad.
Wow, I didn't, honestly, dude, I was listening on mute because, like, sometimes I just do that.
Yeah.
I should not have. I didn't realize he put up 50.
53. But you had KD and Booker put up 38 each, bro.
There you go. And that, dude, that was, it was incredible to watch. It was one of the best games of the playoffs. Like, and it was because the tempo. It was because of the clean style of play. It was because all the drama. And now we're tied 2-2. Right? Both teams have held home court. So now it's a three-game series. This is when it gets good. So the team that wins the next game is probably going to go on to win the series. But we don't know. We don't know anything because we saw how the Suns bounced back and won two in a row. But for
the
Suns to win,
the Suns are primed. If you think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have KD, a couple championships. Booker went there last year. You know, DeAndre Ayton went there last year. So, I mean, they've got a team that's seasoned, ready to go. And you have a team like the Nuggets that don't know what it takes to get there. They just don't. They'd have, one player maybe that's been a bench player on a team and playing for a championship, the championship. So, fuck that, dude. Like, the Suns are ready. And I understand that they're not necessarily a deeper team, but you're going to have to beat the Suns twice, guys. Twice. And I don't know that that's possible right now. The Suns look really fucking good.
Yo, we saw Landry Shamet playing pretty good after getting trashed quite a bit. So I'm happy to see that. I've been a fan of his for a little while. I felt like I really wish we got him in the Shea deal also. He was with the Clippers, but it turned out it didn't need to happen. But when that happened, I was like, ooh, I wish we got Shannon. So I thought that they were actually pretty close to each other in players.
Yeah.
What's up, Josh? So the crazy thing is to find out Shamit is nowhere near the level Shea is. But I actually thought they were close to each other. So life goes on and you learn how little you actually really know about the game. Let's talk a bit about Jacques Landale.
One of my faves.
Pissed before the game and decided that he needed to stand up for DeAndre Ayton. And Ayton been getting trashed.
Bro, that's
Jacques closed the game.
Love it.
Ayton was on the bench. And Jacques was like, man, that's bullshit. Like, he went after the media, and it made us really proud because we hate seeing players, like, get labels in the media and then narratives develop, and then all of a sudden, even if it has no basis in reality, people keep repeating it. And Jacques was just like, did you see him? Like, he was saying, like...
Dude, a minute and 31 seconds of just making sure people knew what he felt about... You know, DJ, man. It was just sick,
and,
man.
And he goes after him and he's like, no, he goes after like this idea that like he's in the closing lineup to guard Jokic. And DeAndre is pulling him aside and talking to him about tendencies like he's like a coach, right? Like, you don't see that from somebody who's pissed that they're on the bench. So I'm sitting here watching like Jacques outplay, according to his coach, at least defensively, the starter, right? And then feel like he has to stand up for the starter. Right, which is uncommon because it's like he's earning these minutes and he has to kind of feel bad for the other guy, which is fucked up that he has to. And then on top of that, he's like looking at it, he's like, look at how much the starter is being like a coach and you guys are treating him like he's not. And it's ridiculous. And I'm proud of
him. What's happening, right?
Yeah.
The de-evaluation of a player. How low can this go? And to me, this is why last episode you asked me what player I would love to see that's, you know, underrated and stuff like that on this team. And to me, it's a big body. I always like to see big bodies, and there's very few guys that I would consider as a big body to come on this team that would fit within reason to what we're trying to do here. Within reason. I always felt like DeAndre is that player that we could teach to be that player. You know, like, he would have to develop, but he's still young enough he can do that. You know? So when I thought in my mind, I'm like, man, I would love for us to go get him and bring him to this team, because this next year, his value is going to be so low. And a lot of that's due to what Jock's doing right now. Jock is just playing amazing. And let's give him credit, because he is. And because of that, they're going to be looking at this and saying, we can keep three of the four highest paid players that we have. We've got to get rid of one of them so we can actually be a player in free agency and drafting and moving up or moving down or moving out, like whatever it is, right? They need to be on top of that. So for me, I'm looking at that and saying, if it's DeAndre's value is so low, we could pick him up for pennies, right? We bring him into Oklahoma City, allow him to play, and then when it's re-signing time for these guys, his value is so high.
Mm-hmm.
Chet's body's ready, you know? Jay Will, JRE, now all these guys have another year to develop their bodies. They're ready for big minutes now. And that's why it's important when we're looking at, it's not about addressing a big man in the draft. It's about addressing a big man with somebody else in the league that can handle the workload that we're going to throw at them. And there's very few guys in this league that are available and that are good enough that I would consider, yes. And I think that's the thing about it, is that it's not necessarily, and we got to say this over and over again, it's not necessarily something that I would always consider. But what Sam Presti has shown that he can pick in the draft, guys, in that guard, point guard, shooting guard, hybrid role, you gotta let him keep going with that. Don't stop. Mm-hmm. Like, keep on picking those guys up all you want. Address the big guys and what we need to help Chet and what we need to help Jay Will. And we'll know what that is more through the season. But you can't deny that having a player of what I would consider a top 10 big man in the league wouldn't help you.
So let's talk, man. Let's talk about another series that's all tied up at two. We saw Philly pull out an OT win. James Harden, another really, really good former Thunder player who's playing great in this playoffs. I mean, every single team you watch, you're like, former Thunder player. So it's fun. It's like,
so I got a question, though, quickly, though. Kobe Bryant came out and said, well, came out before he died, obviously, that James Harden, the style of play, he'll never be able to win a championship. Now, with everything the way it's changing, is that the old school mind of thought that's going on, or do you actually think that Harden will still never be able to win a championship?
Well, I mean, look, I think that if you're going to take what, and I don't remember Kobe saying it, but, you know, take your word for it, for like what he said, I would assume that it was basically with this assumption that with Harden being the number one option and best player on the team, like, okay. I don't think that he would necessarily have been like the future if he gets onto MVP, you know, in that he's the best, the MVP, other guy's the MVP, and then Harden's the second best player. Like, there are ways to work around an absolute like that. So, I mean, I kind of doubt that he was anticipating this Philly time for Harden. Okay. But, I mean, how about Boston? Joe Mazzulla, with two timeouts left, didn't call timeout and set up a play, and they weren't actually able to get a shot off. I mean, Smart's shot was he got it up, but it was in his hands when the ball released. So,
yeah,
a lot of people have been putting Joe in the doghouse, saying he's not very good at end-of-game situations. I don't watch enough Boston Celtics to have an opinion on that.
Yeah.
So this is like the first time I'm noticing it, and I'm like, yeah, that was probably not the best situation. What do you think?
Man.
Would you have called timeout?
What?
Would you have called timeout if you had two timeouts and the ball with the, you know, you could get the final shot? Or would you just run it and, I mean.
Dude, here's the thing about it, is that I want to say that I would use a timeout, but here's the reality, and you and I both know this, is that every game is different. You've got to feel the game. As a coach, if you recognize that your players aren't responding well to timeouts, or your players aren't responding well to timeouts, you've got to do what's right at that moment.
Right.
You know, and like the thing is that everybody knows that players and coaches, and they're all moody. They all have different moods. So recognizing what mood your coaches in and your players are in is the key.
All right. Very good.
So I think that is a very good question for like individual at the moment. Coach, why did you call timeout, or why didn't you call timeout in this situation? You know, because then I would have liked to know what his mindset is, because again, in that moment, he already is thought of the reason and three reasons, you know, like these guys are professionals. It's what they do. You know, they read their players.
Right. Right. So I don't know, man, like if you're in that spot though, right, I guess you don't want to be thinking about the narratives as a coach, like, oh, people are saying, so I better call timeout. I better do this because people are going to say, but, and you got Tatum, you know, end of game situation, but the shot ended up finding Smart and it was late. So of course that's going to be questioned. He could be in Boston. If you lose the series to Philly, like, people are going to be hyper-focused on that one thing, end-of-game situations from your coach. And that's a big deal. So,
well, and
you hate seeing the narrative get out of control, but I'd rather get out of control on a coach and a player.
Yeah, but you look at what Philly is, and they're a very veteran team with a very veteran coach, you know? You know, what else? Like, this is bound to happen to these teams like this. And yes,
yeah, but you're Boston.
Celtics,
you went to the finals last year. You
but
can't.
Yes, and I hear you. But with a young team, and this happened with the Oklahoma City Thunder.
How young are they though? They're not as young as it feels.
But you're right, because they have a couple older guys that are
their
main players are under 24 years old, 25.
But they're also being paid like they're not young. So that's one of the things that like really puts the pressure on, is like, how long can you pay super premium contracts for players that aren't going to the finals, or at least the conference finals? But this is a hypothetical. We don't know what this is going to go like. I honestly don't feel like Philly is going to win the series, but all of a sudden, nothing looks like it's sure. If Philly goes in and wins in Boston, and all they have to do is win at home to seal the series,
yeah,
you got to like their chances there. That's Doc Rivers going to go in and try to get this win. I think it's pretty special. And then tonight, bro, we got two games that are 2-1. We got Lakers up 2-1 on the Warriors and Miami up 2-1 on the Knicks. I'm hoping for all four series to be tied at 2, because honestly, this has a chance to be one of the best playoff series, like playoff second rounds we've ever seen.
Yep.
Because all these playoff series are good.
Yeah, man. First of all, good luck, El Sombro. I hope you have a great interview. Keep peace of mind, man. You're going to do amazing. And keep it up, dude, because you're a good dude. And all you got to do is be yourself, and people like it. So, and
shout
I agree, Josh.
St. Louis.
Yeah, St. Louis. We have family in St. Louis, too. Same. It's great. Yeah. Josh, I agree, man. Mike Muscala would definitely be helping the situation. But the problem is that sometimes when you have a young coach like this, substitutions aren't as easy as recognized. And it's just hard, man. Like, I feel for Mike. But on
What's
the same
up, George in Germany?
Yeah. It's crazy.
What's up, dude? Sorry.
What's up, George?
Hanging out. What part of Germany, bro? Blake, what's going on, man?
Blake.
So, all right, let's talk about the Knicks and Miami, bro. Or do you want to talk about the Lakers and Warriors? You pick.
Dude. I like Lakers and Warriors, but let's go to Knicks because let's get this out of the way.
You think it's going to get it tied up at two tonight? Or
dude,
you think
I believe
Miami's
in Knicks,
gonna...
man. And not that I don't
believe
in Miami, but Miami looks to me like they're on a mission. And listen, if Miami wins, I think there's a chance that they could be good enough to go on after that. And that's scary because this goes right back to what we were saying to everybody before the playoffs started, is the playing game is now becoming more important than anything else. And we're starting to see firsthand how important that playing game is. And yes, sometimes a rest is better for a team, but we also see what happens when you rest. And it's scary because if you rest and you lose two games that you shouldn't lose because you're just not in sync, right? I mean, you're in turmoil at that point because now all they got to do is win two more games and you're out of the playoffs. And we saw that happen time and time again with a, 8, 7, and 6 seed this year.
Man. And I'm pumped up about, the Suns, the energy that was in the arena.
Yeah.
After they tied it up, like it just made me. I was glad I stayed up for the game, And I'm gonna keep doing this because these playoffs are getting spicy. Conference finals should be another level, but right now we've got something special. The NBA should be pumped. I mean, this is good for them. They got a little turmoil. They got a little controversy. That's good too. We got Knicks and Heat. That's great. That's unbelievable for the NBA. But let's talk Warriors and Lakers. Who you got tonight?
I hate both teams with a passion, but I want to say this. I hate Golden State Warriors so much more than the Lakers at this point in my life. So I am hoping for the slight upset the Lakers win here. And the reason is because call me a fantasy person, whatever you want to say, but I'm really, really hoping for a 7 and 8 seed for the finals. I think that would be unbelievable for the NBA because a 7 and 8 would be Heat versus Lakers. Right, man? That would be amazing.
So let's rank the series real quick. We got four series, all right? Philly-Boston, Suns-Nuggets, Knicks-Miami, and Lakers-Warriors. Which one do you think is the best series going right now?
Lakers-Warriors, man.
Okay, that's one.
You got two veteran teams that know what to take, have multiple championship caliber players, MVPs, whatever you want to say. It's insane.
All right, so then the second best series...
Well, up until last night, I was going to say Knicks versus Heat, but now I'm starting to get that love for Denver Suns, man. I get excited about that now. We get a little bit of hate from the fans now. You're going to get some screaming, yelling, people cheering, throwing stuff. It's going to be fun. It's going to be an intense environment.
All right, so we got Philly and Boston and New York and Miami. Which one do you think ranks third? And this is what...
New York, Miami. I mean,
and Philly and Boston at tied at 2-2.
I know,
like
and that's what's so
historically
crazy to me. Boston and Philly. It's crazy overtime games. Like this is what's like. Call me, whatever you want, but I love underdog teams.
Mm-hmm.
I love underdog teams, and this year more than ever before, we have a choice of tons of underdog teams. I mean, think about
it. It's great.
No one would have ever thought the Knicks could have made it to the conference finals. No one ever thought the Heat could have made it to the conference finals. One of those teams weren't going to make it. I mean, you go
the Lakers
on the other side,
came from the play-in.
Yeah. You
go
the
Warriors
on the other side.
Barely
the
made
two
it
best
out of
teams
them.
In the East are playing against each other right now, right? Or I would even say the three best teams in the East, two of them are going to get kicked out before the Western Conference Finals. You know, like, it's insane to me, man. I keep going back to it over and over and over again that when you're looking at this year more than any other year, the excitement that something's happening and everybody's getting on it, it's crazy, man. Like, I can't even describe it. I'm glad you're back, but man, I can't describe it, man. Like, I wish we were in the playoffs this year so badly. But you know what's happening? Because this playoff is so historic, you don't think that this is going to be chapping at our guys' hearts a little bit, bro? I don't think this is going to be like Shea being like, damn it, we could have beat Denver. Fuck. You know, J-Dub getting in the gym. Have you guys been seeing the dunks that he's been throwing up on Instagram and shit? Between the legs, 3-6. I mean, dude, his ups have already gotten better. It's insane. What are we talking about? Like, that's when I said last episode.
Elite
I said,
athletes. I broke it down. Elite training programs.
Yeah, and I broke it down to 51 games that I thought this team could win. But it could be up to 55, and some guy thought I was crazy on crack.
Oh, listen, yeah, I loved it, dude.
By all respect, I could be on crack when I talk about this Thunder team, and I'm okay with that. Because what I see with this team is J-Dub's better. So much better already. Shea's going to get better. Dort. Josh, all of our starters are going to get better. Then we're going to insert somebody that's going to get us 5 to 7 more wins automatically. Automatically, guys. And then we're sitting there saying, so you think that 11 or 12 more wins is out of character for this team? No, it's not, because we're going to be so much better from everybody working hard. And then on top of that, you keep adding, right, guys? Our bench is better. Kenny Hustle's out there. We could have gotten, what, 2 more wins with Kenny Hustle, maybe 3 out there? And then all of a sudden we're sitting here saying, okay, you know what? 55 could happen. You know, it could happen.
Put the crack pipe down, bro. That's what we told.
The baseline for me, right, for this team and understanding, you know, where it's going to be is, you know, I bet you money that ESPN is going to be at 48 to 51 for this team. And guessing really? What their wins are going to be this next year.
I bet
year.
They go 45, but you might be right.
Because the reality is they bet too low this last year and they're going to cover up this next year. Because the team could do something crazy like that, man.
Right, you got to cover your fucking ass, right?
And yeah, like people want to put this Oklahoma City Thunder team in a box, and I just laugh. Like seriously, like how can you put a number on what this team could do? And that's when I say 51 to 55, and people are like, "You're crazy, Dave." Well, that's because there's no ceiling for this team.
I mean, these are the same people who probably thought that we couldn't win more than 25 games this year. So we're sitting here, we're like, well, we projected 35 plus. So now we're like, well, let's extrapolate and take it forward. And they're like, oh, you guys are getting carried away. I mean, look, there could be regression. Like, absolutely. We see that all the time. But I don't think anybody here thinks that there's going to be regression. I don't think, like, dude, we anticipate progression.
Even if we get to 50 game wins next year, mm-hmm. it could be just enough to get the 8th seed or 7th seed, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we're still going to probably have to play-in.
Right.
And that's because the NBA in the West has gotten better. And to me, like, this is what it's going to be like for a couple years before everybody starts getting hurt and retiring, you know? Like, and that's it. All we got to do is go out there, we'll surprise a veteran team in the playoffs. And when we surprise a team in the playoffs that's a veteran team, everybody's going to be like, holy shit, this Oklahoma City team has arrived. But until then, we're not going to get any goddamn respect.
And that's fine. Because you know what? You said it earlier. You said you love underdogs. You're willing to cheer for a different team if they're the underdogs, but there's nothing better than cheering for your own team when they're the underdogs and they're continuing to shock people. The thing is, the Thunder have made a statement about how good they are with 40 wins. The question is, is anybody paying attention enough to actually hear them? Like, you can make a statement, but people aren't going to pay attention until you make it to the playoffs, and that's fine. Like, some of these people, I don't blame them for not watching all 30 teams and being like, yeah, who's really good? You got to wait till, you know, the playoffs kind of thin things out a little bit, and then you can be like, who's actually a contender if you're one of, you know, if just an average fan. So I get that. But, like, if they come out and they put up a 55-win year, look, some years are a lot – like teams with a lot more wins, but that would have been top 3 or 4 this year, I think. It might have even been higher than that, because I think the team with the most wins had under 60, right? That was – so it could be completely wild, but it also, you know, we could be sitting here 45, and that's fine too. Like, we don't want to get carried away and skip steps. But we also don't want to like ignore the fact that we're adding the number two pick, who's going to be better for having taken a year to understand the league. J-Dub's getting better. I think you take those two players and then whoever we draft. So three guys, and you say like that, just getting a little bit better could add 3 to 4 games, sure, right? And then you say Shea gets better, Giddy gets better, and you bring Kenny
our
back.
Defense and offense is more efficient. Is in the top five each.
Maybe 3 or 4 more games. Maybe Coach D comes back a little bit better, and he helps win us 1 or 2 more games. Like, you could see it getting there with just incremental improvements, and that's, even though a lot of people don't see that, that's really the key. We're not talking about a complete overhaul or transformation. Like, the groundwork has been laid. They just need to take the next step.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Man, Phantom, you had me at the first two guys. I'm cool with Grady Dick and Dylan Brooks. But the second you said Victor is, I was like, man, I want 3 testicles in my life. You know, like, I feel like having 3 testicles would make me so much better of a dude than only having 2. But that's not going to happen. So instead of me thinking about Victor being on this team, I just want to focus on the other two, Dylan Brooks and Grady Dick. Always adding players like this in this caliber would be amazing for this team. We talked about it in a bunch of other episodes with Dylan Brooks. We are all about being positive about the players, whether that's DeAndre, whether that's Dylan Brooks, whether that's Dort. It doesn't matter, guys. If people are throwing shit at them, we're going to stand up for them. So we want to see these guys that have an opportunity to rehab their career be feeling like and feel like they can come to Oklahoma, because that's what Oklahoma's about. It's embracing. It's embracing the people that need a second chance in life. And I think that's what's most important thing as we're looking at this team and the way they develop, is that there's going to be opportunities that we are able to pick up a very great player from the offseason. And the way that we're going to be able to pick them up is because of the way that we accept people in Oklahoma. And I think that's the most beautiful thing about Oklahoma City in general, and how Oklahoma City got to Oklahoma City and became the capital in general. Like, yeah, everybody knows that lives in Oklahoma that Guthrie used to be the capital of Oklahoma, right? And because of the way that the newspaper was trashing the governor said, I'm going to move if you guys don't stop it. And they didn't, and they moved because he believed in a second chance.
So he gave himself
He gave himself a second chance.
I'm taking this with me, and I'm leaving. Dude. So I appreciate Corey coming to the rescue here and giving us a little context. He said, if you do get a third ball, or if you did have 3 balls, then the third one just gets – the other ones get lazy. So it actually doesn't give you an advantage.
But I would have $75,000 more.
There you go. But here's what I would say.
Advantage me.
Like, Tesla. If you're the ball family,
I call
family,
that my third
right?
testicle.
You got Lonzo and you got LaMelo. Did you really need LiAngelo? That's the lazy third ball.
You're right. Yep.
There you go. There you go. Don't be LiAngelo. All right, and you mentioned it. Victor Wembanyama. I saw some live stuff on YouTube of Victor balling yesterday. I mean, I understand why everybody gets excited about him, but I'm gonna play a little devil's advocate because
I love it. I've been playing devil's advocate with Victor.
Yeah,
for a
you've
while.
Been saying like maybe he's not gonna be able to be as effective in the NBA as everybody thinks. And after watching it, I started to see what you were talking about. He plays in his league like you would expect him to play in the NBA. Like, get in the post, ISO, go to work. But he's not playing against elite defenders. And he relies on his handle so much to get to his spots. And if he can't rely on that in the NBA, it's going to be very difficult. It could take 4 or 5 years for him to transition his game. And a lot of people don't think that's going to take the place. So I feel suddenly like maybe, like, even though he has spectacular highlights and they're incredible and it's like 7'4", nobody can put a hand in his face, maybe it won't be as sure of a lock for him to win the Rookie of the Year as everybody thought, which would open the door for potentially Chet getting Rookie of the Year. How do you feel about that?
I agree. I think next, when we're talking about it, we're going to be looking at Chet. We're going to look at Scoot Henderson as the top 2 players for Rookie of the Year next year. And that's due to all due respect to Victor. And I'm not – I mean, people think I'm crazy here. I'm not convinced that Victor's number 1 pick still. I think there is a couple teams that would rather have Scoot on their team. I just do. And I think that there's other teams that were like, hell no, there's no way in the world we'd pass on Victor. Mm-hmm. But I'm still not convinced that he is the for sure number one pick in the draft. And what is crazy about that is because last year at this point, man, we were so certain that Chet was the number one pick of the draft. Like, we were certain. We're like, Chet's going number one. But I'm watching how Chet got passed up on this last year. And all the same things that people talked about Chet are they going to be talking about Victor, man. And it's going to make it for hard for a team to look at the Oklahoma City Thunder and be like, you know, Paolo had a better season than Chet. You know? And if they're looking at it like that and they're saying, we want to have somebody that's going to be able to da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da, there might be a situation where a team that has the first pick overall might trade back or take Scoot.
George, what's up, man? Chet, Poku, Jang, J-Will, Giddy, the lineup that's going to dominate next year. And Carson, what you're asking about Shea's MVP.
This goes back
to his post-game press conference where he said, like, there is no individual success outside of team success. He didn't say that's a paraphrase, but that's what I really picked up from him. And if he wants to win the MVP, that's going to be the team, right? It's a team award. You don't win the MVP with 20 wins as a team. You win the MVP because your team won a tremendous amount of games and you had the best season on your team and probably the best season in the NBA, although we've seen times where the person who had the best season on the most wins doesn't win it, and there's different various reasons. They say you have a system or you have a coach or you have a better second player. There's different variations of that, but 55 wins, Shea wins the MVP. That's my assessment.
Yeah, that's what that is. That's why that to me is why I picked that number in the first place, is because if the Thunder get to that, then we're getting most improved players, MVP, and those things matter. I mean, as much as players say they don't matter, right? I mean, we've all been there, guys. If you've ever had been an opportunity to give an MVP trophy or an All-Star trophy or any of that stuff, man, or an All-Star t-shirt, you know, deep down inside, even though you're like, that doesn't matter, deep down inside, you know it matters. And why does it matter? It matters because of confidence, man. Because if Shea's going out there and winning the MVP, you're telling me that it's not going to matter to him that he's a first guard in the last 6 years, 7 years to get an MVP trophy? That, dude, I'm telling you, those things matter to players, man. Those things matter big time. And so as much as I don't want to say that this matters to Shea, what's going to end up happening is if Shea has an opportunity to get there and we have an opportunity for 55 wins and we know that's the mark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coach and the players will make a decision for Shea if we're going for that for him. That's going to be a decision that's going to be taken away from Shea because Shea's not going to be one of making that decision. Would you want to make that decision for yourself? Hey, guys, 55 wins or me getting MVP or 52 wins and having an easier time in the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Like, go balls to the wall like we've been learning how. Like, when we're down 15 and there's 1 minute left and we go on an 8-0 run, like, that's what this is about. It just gets back to the basics, man. Like, this is how we play. We don't go and say, hey, we're going to take 2 or 3 games off to be easier. No. If we're healthy, we're going balls to the fucking walls.
That's right. So, call it, bro. Tonight, Lakers, Warriors, who you got for the win? I think you already said it, but I forget.
Dude, Lakers.
All right, so that series will be getting pretty tied up, 3-1. Gonna look. And then Miami Knicks, you're calling 2-2 on that one? All right. Hopefully, I'm hoping for a 2-2 on 4 series. I'm excited about it, bro. I got 1 week until I'm out of this house. Oops. So. Excited about that, too. Yeah, dude.
You're on the road again.
On the road again, man. Getting pumped. Yeah. Throwing trash away. Emptying out our shit. So
that's the best part, man. Minimizing.
Carson, I did not see the whole game. I saw Harden. Dude, I saw the highlight of him.
I'm sorry. I was more concerned about Booker's incredibly efficient night I mean, that was insane, guys. I think there was at one point that he hit like 21 of his last 26 shots or something like that. It was like, what the hell? Like, and that was combining two games together. So anyways.
And the way Booker does it, or was doing it, the way that you really saw Phoenix saw that they recognized that their best advantage came in transition.
Yeah.
And Booker was pushing the ball up the court and shooting like within 3 seconds. Like, it was incredible how fast he was getting a shot off and how, like, how quickly he'd be going, how fast he'd stop, and how much balance he could achieve. I mean, I know I can't go from a full sprint to gathering myself. Like, you have to – everybody, they have to take that slow down step to step into it. He wasn't doing that. Hell, and it was like they had hit it in practice. They were like, we're getting the cross matchups we want. We can't let them get their defense set. KD, Booker, score every time you can in transition. It was just like, oh, my God. That team looks good. They look really good. They look like a championship contender.
Yeah. I mean, that's – again
– and the Nuggets didn't.
Nuggets look lost right now.
The Nuggets look like they had one player who was ready to be a championship.
They did great, player. But it just looked like they're playing catch-up ball the whole time. And when you're playing catch-up ball, you always look like it's the massive lead is never getting shorter. You know, like, how many times have we watched the Thunder play where we're like, man, we scored like 40 points in that quarter. And we look at the score sheet and we're like, you know, yeah, we got beat by like 5 points, but they scored 38 in that quarter. You know, like, it sucks. But when a team's on and you're on, sometimes this is beautiful basketball, and that's why it's kind of fun to be able to sit back and just observe. Because, you know, the other night with you know, Joker going for 53, and you're watching, you know, what 80 something points or 76 points, whatever it was, from the other two guys. Like, from it was just beautiful, man. Like, it was just fun basketball, and I think to me, like, that's what I'm going to miss, I guess, when the playoffs start, as much as I'm going to hate. Because, like, right now it's just observing. But next year, man, I have no doubt that this team has a legit chance to get to the second round. And I to me, like, I'm going to be so intense in every single game. It's, you know, there's no going to be like, fun basketball again. Because, you know.
Yeah.
It's more hard. Games it's, lost. We're out for the season.
Yeah, it's hard because we are a little too passionate. So it does help a little bit when we can step back and not have our team in it, and we can just kind of observe. Makes it a little easier, but we're going to be turning it up as this team gets crazy. I miss those live in-game
hangouts,
streams, those hangouts. Yeah, those were a blast. So, you know, we'll get back to those.
We got coming up here really fucking quick, dude.
Oh yeah, the lottery, bro. We're going to go live for the lotto.
We're definitely going live for the lotto. We'll probably jump on a few minutes before the lotto happens. I think it happens Wednesday, doesn't it?
I think so. No, we'll I think it's the 15th. It's a week from today, I think.
A week from today.
I think it's the 15th. It might be the 16th, but...
Yeah. Either way, we're good. Yeah. We'll make sure we go live on that, you guys.
We'll see you then. All right, hey, guys. We appreciate everybody. Love you.